Monster Man, Episode 167, Cave Fisher to Centipede. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the C chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Before we get started, a quick thank you note. I asked a few episodes back about identifying different artists from Monster Manual 2, and so there's an artist in particular who has a sort of monogram signature that looks like a circle or some other shape with a long slash through it, and I didn't know if that was a Q or a sort of lowercase e. It's a Q, and the artist is in fact Harry Quinn, so thanks to Guy Fullerton for that identification. Our first monster for today is the Cave Fisher. Now, the Cave Fisher is a kind of big climbing bug-like or crustacean-like creature that crawls around in the upper ledges of caves, and it attacks its prey using a sort of Spider-Man-like web, a long, sticky-ended filament that it can use to grab people and reel them in, where it can snip them into easily manageable chunks. The filament is a really neat idea. It does have a slightly weird rule where you need a plus one or better weapon to cut through it, which I'm not quite sure why that's in there. I presume just to sort of up the difficulty level of the monster, but it does kind of get away from its science fictional whatever. You could just say that the filament is very small and thin, and therefore it's, you know, it's hard to correctly identify where it is or something like that. You can also dissolve the filament's adhesive in any kind of alcohol solution, which includes cavefisher blood. The thing that I like about cavefishers as a monster is that to be fully effective, this monster requires you to think about dungeon settings as three-dimensional spaces, right? This is a creature whose attack direction is a vertical, and I don't just mean something like, you know, the lurker above, which drops down and, you know, hits you at the ground level, and where the verticality is just in like, oh, you sort of, you know, you didn't notice it. You know, this is a case where climbing could be important, where getting up to where the cave fisher is matters. And I think it's very easy for dungeons to become essentially two-dimensional environments, largely because it's very easy to reflect those in paper products. So chances are you're making a map that is functionally two-dimensional. So this forces you to think a little more creatively about heightening the spaces of your Dungeons & Dragons campaign. And I think anything that stops the game from being, you know, two sides meeting on an infinite plane of blue squares, like it's a Phantasy Star or whatever. Is that Phantasy Star that had the blue squares? Anyway, whichever. Anything that stops combat just being an experience about matching powers against targets, I think is really desirable. So for that reason, I think the Cave Fisher is actually pretty cool. This is more of your sci-fi monster. Like, it just seems like an alien species, something that doesn't exist. And if it did exist, you'd be like, oh, well, yeah, I bet there is such a creature in the real world, but it's not that big kind of thing. So I think the Cave Fisher is pretty good. The next creature on the list is the Cave Moray. And these are basically sort of slug creatures. And they live in tiny tunnels or cysts that grow on, you know, or that they build, I guess, on dungeon walls. And they basically pop out of these holes kind of like a moray eel does. When you think of moray eels, they tend to live in narrow holes, and then they dart out and strike, grab their prey, and pull it back into the hole. Now, obviously, in the case of the cave moray, it's not pulling its prey back into the hole because it's not hunting a little fish. It's hunting, like, your ankles or whatever. So they kind of pop out, take a bite at you, and pop back in, presumably hoping to snap off a big enough chunk to give themselves a meal once they've retreated into their little passage in the rock. So the cave moray is more of a nuisance monster, right? You can kind of assume that their regular prey is not adventurers' ankles, but smaller creatures that might be scuttling along these dungeon walls. And there's a little mini system in here for hitting them, because even though they're not like heavily armored creatures, they're darting in and out of the hole quickly, so you're kind of playing whack-a-mole, is more difficult to hit them than their relative normal lack of protection would imply, which I think is a pretty good rule in general. I like it when there are things that take these circumstances into account. Anything basically that stops one strategy from being optimal. The Cave Moray feels to me like a dungeon hazard monster, right? Like you're gingerly picking your way down this narrow passage in the rock lined with the cysts of the cave morays, and you know that if you stay pretty close to the center of it, they won't be able to pop out and get you, which is all fine until you're fleeing from some other creature down the corridor going the other way. And then it might be tricky to avoid their attention. On the other hand, perhaps you can lure the thing that's chasing you in there. Again, another kind of pseudo-naturalistic monster that makes for a fun little additional hazard in an underground encounter. Less gonna be there in a kind of built environment dungeon, and more something that you would find in caverns. It reminds me a little bit of the creature that pops out of the rock in Big Trouble in Little China, where they're going through the secret underground passageways, and this giant monster pops out of a hole, grabs a guy, and retreats. Egg Shen throws some magic doodad at it, and he says, "It will come out no more." And Jack Burton, understandably, is like, "What, Egg? What will come out no more?" There's probably quite a lot of interesting thoughts about dungeon design in Big Trouble in Little China, frankly. Finally, we have the centipede. Centipedes are either huge or megalo. And these are basically the kind of the brackets on either side of the centipede, comma, giant. A huge centipede is not quite as big as a giant centipede, and a megalocentipede is bigger even than a giant centipede. They're fine. They're great for all the reasons that centipedes are actually creepy. There's something horrible about looking at centipedes, and the fact that they are venomous is particularly horrid, even though most centipedes aren't venomous enough to hurt a person, at least most centipedes. But really, even without the threat of venom, there's something creepy about seeing all those little legs moving at once. I don't know why, but this seems to be a relatively common response to seeing creatures like the centipede. It's something to do with its combination of softness and rigidity in its appearance. Like, crabs are the least horrible arthropods, right? Because they're all kind of rigid and hard, and they make sense. They're like little robots. They're like little knights in armor. You look at a lobster, and the lobster makes sense. You know, look at the underside of the lobster, it's a bit gross. But there are lots of arthropods that run along that boundary between being soft creatures, which we get, and hard creatures, which we get, to being creatures that reveal that our schema don't really make any sense. And I think that that's a very uncomfortable feeling. Definitely there's no creature that I like to think, oh, creature crawling all over you. But somehow, centipedes crawling all over you is grosser than, say, ants crawling all over you. You can imagine ants crawling all over you being uncomfortable, and bees crawling all over you being frightening, but having centipedes crawling all over you would be uncomfortable, frightening, and gross. It's also why maybe the megalocentipede is not as good a monster as a smaller centipede. Maybe the huge centipede is better. This is like the thing about giant spiders. A giant spider bigger than you is only frightening because it's bigger than you. It's only frightening in the sense that any other large animal is frightening. Is not going to sting you. You know, one of those fangs would go all the way through you. A megalocentipede is horrible, but the huge centipede, where it's just really, really big for a centipede, that's much more horrifying. Your megalocentipede, too big to scurry up your trouser leg. Huge centipede probably could still do it. I don't know, maybe not a trouser leg, but it could definitely, like, try to drop down the back of your robes. And I think that that's really the sweet spot for a creepy crawly monster. Small is fine. You get them up too big and they lose some of what makes them creepy crawly. But I like the centipede. Centipedes would be deeply creepy even if they weren't venomous, and more different types of centipede in games keeps a level of discomfort and horror in an encounter, even without necessarily introducing monsters that we typically associate with those feelings, because they're a real-world, naturalistic detail that still has that sense of repulsion to it, and I like them. All right, that's about all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to look at some more sea monsters, including the cheetah. Ooh, no, I take that back, actually. Our next episode is going to be a special episode, and we're going to talk about monsters from classic fantasy movies. So, that's going to be a good one. Join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please